During the legislative hearing on the mental health portion of Governor Cuomo's budget, one of the caution flags thrown by grassroots activists was in response to proposed language that would essentially make it easier to have New Yorkers involuntarily committed for inpatient mental health facilities. To break down the proposal and why it's raising concerns, we're joined by Harvey Rosenthal, CEO of New York Association of Psychiatric Rehabilitation Services, a statewide coalition of people who use and or provide recovery-oriented community-based mental health services. Welcome back to the show, Harvey.
Thank you, David.
So for starters, can you describe the circumstances currently that allow for an adult to be involuntarily committed? And can you explain what type of facility they're admitted to and typically for how long?
Yes, the standard really around the country is danger to self or others, which could be seen as simply being homicidal or suicidal, but it's more than that. It's broader than that. And it pretty much covers folks that we're most concerned about, people who are really at the brink of serious self-harm or harm to others. And those people are picked up and brought to the local inpatient unit, usually in a community hospital, sometimes in a state hospital. And the length of stay really depends, Dave, on really the severity of the need and just how people respond, or whether it turns out they really didn't need the care and they're able to be released.
And what happens when you're checked in? Is there some sort of evaluation that's done? And who's responsible for conducting that evaluation?
Sure. In most cases, people come into the emergency room where they're seen by a psychiatrist, whether it's, again, in Albany, it's the state psych center, or the local hospital's psych ward emergency room. So, yes, it's seen by ultimately a psychiatrist has to sign off to sign off on the admission and to say that they meet this criteria. Very often it's two psychiatrists or two physicians or prescribers. They call that a 2PC.
Moving forward, what is the new lower threshold being proposed by the governor?
Well, it's quite alarming. I know that the governor is really trying to help people in need and also, worst case, trying to take people off the street that people are afraid of or concerned about. But this is not the right way to do it. When people here are the kind of people who need care and compassion, not control and coercion. If the standard expands to be a likelihood to result in serious harm, likely to result, so it's fairly low, and it's the judgment of a police officer who is not really trained to do that. And in this case, if they find someone, quote-unquote, a person is experiencing such neglect of basic needs for food, clothing, shelter, or safety. That could apply to so many people. This is not a small number of people as intended, perhaps, but it really is hundreds of people. And if it becomes a standard, thousands of people, it'll really overrun our inpatient units. People really need housing, not a hospital. People need, support, not inpatient care. And people who've had no experience with the psych system don't need to be wind up in a mental hospital where very often they'll be subjected to things they have had no experience with and may not need, which is, involuntary medication, seclusion and restraint, some experiences people have in shock for winding up in a mental hospital with no history.
Is there some sort of constituency in the mental health field that's been advocating for the language change that the governor's proposing?
I think some family groups are, and it's totally understandable. I'm a father, I have people in my family who had needs. I am a person with a mental illness. And I totally understand the heartbreak of watching a loved one walk into these kind of circumstances. But we now know how to help people with the most serious conditions if we have the will to do it. And we can put people on the street. We've done it in our programs that we run. Around the state, there are best practices that have emerged. We have crisis respite programs, crisis stabilization programs, outreach teams that can engage people. Sometimes, we have peer programs that come out with wraparound money. Sometimes it's food, clothing, emergency housing. The answer is not a hospital. And I know it gives people some degree of comfort, but this is a serious rights violation that will really open it up to include many more people than anybody expects.
You mentioned that police officers could be equipped to make this evaluation in terms of these involuntary commitments. Are they the ones who are currently authorized to make the commitments now under the more strict language? And what do you think about maybe not empowering police officers to invoke this action in the future, but maybe having very specific mental health, you know, responders to be responsible for this?
Well, you make a couple of good points. First, I do think the police would be the ones that would have to make that judgment. And again, this is a very gray area that could apply to lots of people that you and I know, perhaps. And again, the answer is an emergency assistance, not a mental hospital. So yes, I think, and frankly, as we well know in the last year or two, the police are more than not the wrong people to step in on when people are in crisis. Too often they escalate the situation. Sometimes tragically they, you know, there's fatalities. And, you know, it's one of the issues now, we're now realizing all over the country that when someone's in trouble, it's not about calling 911 and getting the police over there. We should be sending out mental health counselors and medical personnel who will almost invariably, I think, will be able to provide that kind of first-line care or support people to go to an emergency alternative to a hospital.
We're discussing the delivery of mental health services and involuntary mental health treatment, and our guest is Harvey Rosenthal, CEO of New York Association of Psychiatric Rehabilitation Services. So another provision that I think a lot of people in New York are familiar with is Kendra's Law, something that's been around for a bit now. What are your thoughts on the administration of that proposal, which I think really fits into this discussion we're having about involuntary commitments?
Well, Kendra's Law is another example of projecting what could happen. Kendra's Law has criteria by which people could wind up in a court-ordered outpatient commitment program, and if they don't do X, Y, and Z, perhaps take medicine or go see a doctor, they, you know, someone will come out and bring them in and admit them for 3 days and evaluate them. And again, I'll go back to what I said earlier. This is so regressive, you know. I will go back someday and say, can you believe we had such trouble engaging people and didn't assume responsibility for that we brought in the judge and the police when it was our responsibility, and we knew how to engage people. But Kendra's Law is also, it's never really passed the smell test of research that really looks at, like it was in the beginning. They had a cohort of two groups that had the same needs. One group got a forced treatment order. Both groups got more and better services, and the research found that it was the services. We created a program a couple of years ago, thanks to funding with the Assembly, that has been operated by the Mental Health Association of Westchester, working with, you know, trying to find and engage the same group as with Kendra's Law, people that meet a certain standard of need and haven't historically responded. There's a lot of reasons why people don't respond to care, but one of the best ways to get them to respond to care is with peers, people with mental illness who can help others who have one. So our model is four peers and a nurse and a care manager, and that model has engaged 80% of the people who normally folks would say, well, they need a court order. They're never going to accept that they need help. They're not going to follow through. And that's not true. 80% of a group that is supposed to be so non-responsive that you have to bring a judge in really disproves that. So it really undermines the argument. So the governor's proposal here to expand it further is really not acceptable.
You've highlighted the Crisis Stabilization Center in Dutchess County. And do you think that model is something that could be replicated all over the state with enough resources and commitment?
Yeah, the Crisis Stabilization Program in Dutchess County was launched by the county exec, Mark Molinaro. And it was constructed to be essentially an urgent care program where there were doctors and addiction counselors and peers where there are, and personnel, a variety of personnel. And people can bring themselves there or can be helped to get there, and in some cases they're transported by the police, which is not what, you know, not what we're looking for here, and one of the problems with the governor's proposal. But in general, David, it's a really progressive model that is showing more and more results. The model in Dutchess County has great sort of grades in being able to engage people. And what's most important is when people are not transported against their will and they get the kind of real intensive care and support, whether they had symptoms, whether they've been drinking, whether they have medical issues, these programs with their embracing and welcoming approach, far different and better than a hospital, an emergency room, and God forbid, you know, a jail or a prison if things go wrong. This is the program of the future here now. The governor is proposing this, and we'd like to be fully supportive of it. We are worried about the provisions that seem to allow or even maybe encourage police to be the ones that transport people against their will. The fellow that runs the program in Dutchess County is very clear that they score very high with people who are voluntary, and the people who are transported against their will very often don't come back. People who come in on their own or wind up there in a voluntary, respectful way, they come back on their own, you know, when there's a crisis.
If there is any sort of transition in terms of having the response to mental health situations being led by, you know, mental health experts as opposed to law enforcement, is that something that needs to be driven by local governments, or can this be a top-down sort of thing with the state leading the charge here?
Well, you know, you can go top-down and bottom-up. There is a law that's been proposed by our new Senate Mental Health Committee Chair, Samra Brooke, that is in response to the police murder of Daniel Prude. And it's a little complicated, and it sets up a statewide council and regional councils to try to particularize a response in the community. It just got released, so we're still trying to understand it. But in the end, it is, as you say, it very much is around relationships, like everything, relationships between law enforcement, mental health, social services, medical personnel. The program in Poughkeepsie really naturally brings those folks together. It's run the right way in the right style, and so there isn't this tension between the police and the mental health people. But in Rochester, we're looking at, they just proposed a program that would be around mental health counselors and police. And these are models that have been out for a number of years. Particularly, it started out in something called CAHOOTS, a program out of Eugene, Oregon. Very high marks when you send a counselor and a medical personnel and not a police officer. And everybody wins there. The police don't have to deal with something, in many cases, they're really not good at. And the right kind of help is provided people, and tragedies are averted.
Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. Our guest has been Harvey Rosenthal, CEO of the New York Association of Psychiatric Rehabilitation Services. Harvey, thank you so much for making the time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, David.
You've been listening to the Capitol Press Room. Our engineer in Syracuse is Dave White. My producer in Albany is Tim Williams. I'm David Lombardo. Thanks for listening.
Support for the Capitol Press Room is provided by New York State United Teachers, a union of professionals in education, human services, and healthcare.
Join us again for Capitol Press Room, a production of WCNY Connected, Syracuse.